Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at consumer scams and consumer issues today, zeroing in a little bit on how to avoid getting scammed when you hire home improvement contractors and home care services contractors as well. My guests back once again, they come by every month, Sandy Chalmers, Assistant Deputy Secretary with the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Sandy, welcome back.
Nice to be here.
And Michelle Reinen, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection within the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And Michelle, thank you for coming by as well.
Well, thanks for having us.
Well, we'll talk home improvement, but we can also talk about the latest scams and federal warnings that are out there. So you may have some consumer questions as you listen in. I hope you'll call us. Number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Love to hear from you. But let's start out with hiring a contractor. It can be stressful. There's almost always a lot of money involved. Sandy, how can you make sure you're hiring somebody reliable, reputable?
Home improvement problems tend to be in the top five consumer complaints we get every year, and I think it is because of the amount of money that's typically involved. So if something goes wrong and communication breaks down with your home improvement contractor, it can be very, very frustrating, and people tend to reach out to us. So our advice is to do as much work up front as you can to prevent problems down the road. Some very basic things to do if you're looking at a home improvement project: check references, ask your friends and neighbors who they've used and had success with, who they've been happy with, and then get more than one written estimate. And estimate should be in writing. There's less room for disagreement if you have something in writing. It's a good idea to have the contractor visit your home or job site before giving you that written estimate. Don't take an estimate over the phone because they don't know exactly what the situation is until they can see it. If you get an extremely low estimate, that should raise some warning flags because that usually means that they're using substandard materials or they're going to shortcut you. So be careful of that. And then you can always call us, call our toll-free hotline, and see if complaints have been lodged against a home improvement contractor. So these things are a good place to start.
And the contract itself, there's cost, but there's also, I think, materials. Maybe you want to specify at least a certain grade of material that's to be used?
And the basics there, a written contract is not required by law in every situation, but you should insist on a written contract. Don't go on a handshake or, well, he seems like a nice guy, so, you know, we'll just work it out in the end. That tends to not work out very well. So the value of the contract is that it's that written documentation so that the contractor knows exactly what you want performed and you know exactly what the contractor is going to do on his or her end. And don't sign the contract until you're sure you understand it. If you don't, certainly consult an attorney, and depending on the amount of the project, that may be a good idea anyway. It can be a headache to talk to an attorney, but honestly, if you're contracting for $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $100,000, it's a wise investment.
What about you? Can you talk about liens and lien waivers a bit? Michelle, I'll turn to you for that.
Sure. So lien waiver, think of it. I mean, there's a part in the Wisconsin statutes that governs liens and what all that means. But consumers want to make sure when they make a payment that they're receiving a lien waiver from the contractor and any subcontractors or suppliers that have been involved in the job. And what that really is it's your documentation, your piece of paper, your receipt for payment from all those involved. So someone can't come in later and say, I didn't receive payment for this job, and I now have a lien on your property and home, assuming they've followed all the regulations. And then if you turn around and want to sell the home, you have to clear that lien before that's possible. It has really big implications if a lien's placed on your property. So a contractor is supposed to inform a consumer up front in writing that they have a right to receive these lien waivers. They don't have to just hand them over. A consumer has to ask for them. So it's really important that they do that. Do it up front at the beginning of the contract or in the work, and just say, I'm going to want these. And then when you make a payment, I'm paying you, I would like my lien waiver. Do that reminder at every step. So just be thinking of it in the form of getting your receipt when you make payment at a store. And you make a payment, you get a receipt. But this, it has a formal name. It's a lien waiver.
You know, we've talked about this in the past. Every time there's a tornado or hail or some natural disaster, we have contractors coming into the area from out of state, and there are often problems that develop because of work that may be done by those people. I'm sure not always, but we have a storm chaser law, or what do we got?
Yeah, that's exactly what it calls, and we refer to those contractors that fall along behind the path of a storm as storm chasers. But this is a law that was passed 2 or 3 years ago, and it was really designed to prevent insurance fraud. But it also has the effect of prohibiting a lot of the practices that these fly-by-night contractors use to put pressure on homeowners to make a quick decision about signing a contract. So some of the things that are prohibited now by Wisconsin law are a contractor that promises to pay all or some of the property insurance deductible, they're prohibited from promising to negotiate with the insurance company on the consumer's behalf. And, you know, those are the types of things that these people would say, oh, you know, just sign the contract with us and we'll take care of this, the rest of this stuff for you. And people would think, well, that's a pretty good deal. And then they'd get caught, you know, in this terrible web of fraud.
So be careful about that. And I like to work with somebody local anyway. If they're within a few miles of me, that's kind of the person I want to work with.
Yeah, that's great advice. And you need to think about you're having this work done. The person at your door says, well, we can get it done in a few hours. But then if there's a problem a month or a year or 2 years from then, who do you go to?
Yeah.
And so we do recommend using a local or regional contractor.
Talking today with Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Taking a look at consumer scams, we've been dealing a little bit with contract work right now, but there are other issues, certainly, that they're more than happy to talk with you about. Questions, comments, experiences, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. This time of the year, if you turn on commercial radio or the TV, you're seeing a lot of ads for lawn care operations. So lawn care is another area, frankly, where homeowners can get scammed, isn't it, Michelle?
It is, because you may not know what you're purchasing or the type of contract you're entering into. It's again, really paying attention to fine print, if it exists, or knowing who you're working with and where they're located. So, you know, consider what kind of service it is that you need and how ongoing you want it to be. Do you need a one-time treatment, or are you signing up for whatever they think your lawn needs and they're just going to do it and you pay as you go as the bills arrive? Or do you have a full package that you're signing up for and they let you know and you say yes or no along the way type situation? So before you sign a contract or get into any kind of agreement, know what it is you're receiving and what you should expect. And then what happens if you feel the treatments aren't working, or if they didn't deliver the treatment, or if damage is done because of the treatment?
Your flowers all died.
You know, how do you follow up on that, and what kind of guarantees or warranties sit behind that company? So, you know, be asking questions and know that information. And then know that another one of our divisions at the agency at Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, they actually certify and license pesticide applicators. So if you do it yourself, that's one thing. But if you're hiring somebody, there are regulations in place for that, and you want to make sure that the people you're working with have followed those regulations and have that licensing that's required. So I'll be asking about that as well.
You know, this time of the year, I actually, one of the things I like to do in my own neighborhood is run around to all the little garage sales that are going on. I'm one of those types of people. Out for my run, I'll stop at practically every one, and at least triple the length of my time of my run because I'm stopping for these. Are there things to keep in mind when you're shopping at these little garage sales?
Well, there definitely are, and it really depends on what you're seeking. If you're looking for the old antique to put on the shelf and have it be a great display, or the secret find to make money off the garage sale, that's one thing. But if you're there to be purchasing usable items such as children's clothing, children's toys, nursery equipment, those are big industries that over time, because of all the merchandise going through the marketplace, have had a number of recalls. And we're talking about the safety of the product with the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. So you really want to be in a position to know what it is you're looking for up front. If you're seeking a crib or a pack and play or a changing table, whatever that may be, if you can do your research ahead of time, know what's been recalled, because there have been children who've been killed by some of these things because of product failure, and others, it might be missing an important warning label, and so the recall could be just being aware of that, or maybe a part broke and there's a replacement on it. So there are apps you can put on your phone. So if you don't do the research up front, you can, when you see the product, look on your phone, okay, has this been recalled? There's plenty of educational material, so you know, take a soda can with you. You're going to get thirsty anyway, and if it goes through the crib slats, well, that's a very outdated crib. It doesn't meet safety standards. They've found enough injuries behind that. The other area that's pretty common to find at yard sales could be tools. I mean, if it's an estate sale or a garage sale, a lot of people size down and get rid of their excess tools. So you really want to be paying attention to electrical cords, make sure they're not frayed. There's new safety standards in place about electrocution. So is it a metal or a plastic housing on it? And knowing those things as well. And they've been recalled over time. So just check that out, so you're not bringing something unsafe into your home unknowingly, something that could start fire type situation.
Usually I reserve those kinds of tools for pliers, a hammer or something that I'm pretty sure is going to be okay.
Yep, those should be okay. So the ones with cords.
Oh, boy. Michelle Ryden and Sandy Chalmers, our guests today. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn and her guest will take a look at where child care is falling short in America and what we should consider when looking at reforms. That's at 2 o'clock on the Ideas Network. Now we are taking a look, though, at consumer issues, giving you a consumer update from Michelle Ryden and Sandy Chalmers. And Sally in Menominee has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Sally. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for letting me in. The question I have has come up because we purchased a home within the last year, and you know, shortly thereafter, a few months afterwards, some things went wrong with the heating system, and you know, we've had a couple of appliances that have failed and things like that. Now, those things were all checked over carefully when we bought the house, but of course, things happen. Is the any protection against that kind of thing? I mean, at what point can you go back to the original owner, or can you at all?
Okay. I think some of that has to do with what was in the original contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we don't have any authority or jurisdiction over the sale of homes in that piece of it. But you still want to look at what your contract states, what's being disclosed. Did you purchase a home warranty, and what does that cover? Because those exist. And the Office of Commissioner of Insurance would regulate whether or not that warranty is being honored type situation. But if you are concerned about a disclosure that was made during the sale, I'd probably go back to your realtor first and have a conversation and look at your contract about what was covered there.
Yeah, I'd go back to the realtor for sure. That's great advice. Thanks so much for calling, Sally. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Well, maybe you can give us an update, Sandy, on some of the latest internet scams that are going on out there these days. There's plenty of them.
Honestly, it seems like they never stop. One of interest, this is something the FBI warned about. We talk about Craigslist scams where people will offer to pay for large ticket items and then send you a phony check and things like this. Here's a really interesting kind of twist on that. The FBI says that there was a small robbery crew that was flying sellers in and then robbing them. It's kind of a local story. A Wisconsin woman was involved in this. She was robbed of a $19,000 diamond ring after being flown into St. Louis for the quote-unquote sale. So, you know, there's a real warning here. We always warn people if they're selling on Craigslist, especially if they're selling or buying large dollar items, read the fraud and warnings section of Craigslist so you know what the latest types of scams are. But this is a really scary situation for this woman.
So she flew into...
She was flown in by who she thought was the buyer of the ring, and they just robbed her of her ring.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, man. So that's another one. We haven't talked about that one before. So
that's a new one.
Another new one. Stella in Sturgeon Bay has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I have a question about if you go online and there's an offer for, we were looking for a printer. If you turn in a used printer, you get $100 off.
Okay.
And then in fine print, in-store purchases only, and that printer was not available in any store in the entire southeast corner of Wisconsin.
Oh, so...
So my question is, if they have this big banner of $100 off if you turn in your used printer, and then fine print, in-store purchases only, and the printer is not available in any store in the entire southeast quarter of Wisconsin.
All right.
Is that
a
fraudulent offer?
Well, it'd certainly be something we want to look at. The question I'd have, is it that it was sold out and then they weren't restocking it, not available, or that they never even received any
stocked it. They didn't stock it. They don't stock it.
Yeah, that's something that if you would want to and have information or the ads or anything to file a complaint on, we would want to be looking at that as it relates to regulations on promotions. If you're advertising something, you do have to have a sufficient quantity, and you need to disclose it, you know, that there's limited quantities as well. Stores do have the right to say certain promotions are in store only versus availing them online. So it's more about the fact that there's no quantity there.
Okay. Wait, the end of the story was that we did go to one of the stores as close as we could get, as close to home as we could get. And I spoke to the manager and I pointed this out, and she did give us the turn in $100 off. But I had to be a squeaky wheel.
yeah, sounds like it. But still wouldn't hurt to send something into you, right, Michelle?
Right, because we can look at it as a more global issue than your individual complaint.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And so that you'd be looking into the printer company. It was really the printer company advertisement from the sound of it.
Whoever posted the ad, if it was the company or whomever.
Posted it. Okay. Thanks again. Appreciate it, Stella. Tab in Mazamani, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I have a couple of suggestions when hiring a contractor. Number one, I make them sign a hold harmless agreement that in case of an accident and one of the workers gets hurt, they won't come after me and they have insurance to cover their own workers. That's number one. Number two, no extras will be approved unless I officially sign what I call an official change order outlining the scope, and I had to approve it. So that at the end, they can come back and say, well, you know, we did this extra and that extra, and those are the two suggestions I have for you.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like good advice to me, Michelle.
Yeah, and one of those is actually required by law, that if you have a written contract that outlines what it is you are having them do for work, that you can't change that contract unless the consumer agrees to that change in writing, unless you can do verbal change if there's very specific criteria. It doesn't increase the value, doesn't minimize the quality of the work or the product that's being used. I mean, contractors, because people want to move with the times and agree to things by phone. But then that needs to be documented after the fact as a record, too. And then the liability, I mean, that's important for consumers to say, okay, give me your certificate of liability here, your insurance, so you're aware that they're protected.
Yeah, good point, Stab. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. We have Dave in Altoona up next. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Well, thanks. Say, I got on the listening to this call in the car, and I realized this was just what I've been wanting to talk about. There are two of my main vendors, and they're good vendors. One is my cable company that's providing internet, and the other is my cell phone provider that provides for 5 phones in our family. And, you know, I get only internet on the from its Spectrum. Used to be Charter, but they send this ad every week, or actually every month, that says $59 for internet, phone, and premium TV channels for the first year. And I think, well, that might be fine. I call them up, and they say, well, yes, but you need the $80 converter box every month. And so the advertisement clearly says $59 for the whole bundle. And it might be in the asterisk in the fine print that explains it. But, I called them, and I asked them, and it turns out it would not be what I wanted. It was like well over $100. And then I get the same ad the next month. And so, yes, one side of the equation is promoting things that really don't seem to be what they're promoting. The other thing on the Verizon side was, they've got these 5 phones, and I checked my bill. It's a couple $100 a month. And then I started noticing these $2.99 per line for some cloud storage that I didn't use. I called them and canceled it. It had been 4 months that it was on there, and they said, oh, we can go back 3 months. Then it showed up 3 months later, and they said, oh, we can go back 3 months. And, you know, for me, it's not worth it to take any action, but this has got to be millions of dollars as this is happening to the millions of customers. I don't know where that goes.
Yeah. Sandy Chalmers, we turn to you for that.
Well, first of all, I think it is extremely important to review your monthly bills and do so, look at it very closely, just because these types of things can happen. And we might want to have a copy of his bill. I don't think we've given our contact information out yet.
No.
You can file a complaint online at datcp.wi.gov, and you're taken through an online questionnaire, and then you're given an opportunity to upload documents like statements, monthly statements. Or you can call our toll-free hotline, and that is 1-800-422-7128. Okay. But there is, I'm not saying this is what's going on here, but there is something called cramming, where unauthorized charges are placed on people's bills without their knowledge, and that is a violation of state law.
Great. Thanks. I'll kind of take that path and hope that someone can take the ball.
All right. Thank you so much for calling, Dave. Appreciate your call. Again, it was 1-800-422-7128. And what's the other of the...
It's datcp.wi.gov. And you'll just click on the file a complaint tile.
And I think we put that up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page as well. So you can find it there, too. Lance emailed to ask if you sign a contract with a roofer and he doesn't show up in a year, is the contract void? I suppose it depends on what it says in the contract, but right. You'd certainly think that a year, Michelle, would be...
Well, yeah, and you can cancel that contract as well, because I assume it would have had the start and stop dates as to when the work should have been performed, and so because that hasn't happened, you can, in writing, cancel the contract at this point. That's under the law.
What if you put $200 down?
Well, if we put money down, then you demand the payment back as part of that cancellation, and the law talks about what time period that the contractor needs to do that within, and I believe it's 15 days that with the supply list that was purchased, and then supplies need to be dropped off with, and then the accounting, the different periods of time, 15, 15, 30, if I'm remembering right. But if that doesn't happen, please file a complaint with us. I ask you to do that, because one of the things that we do regularly is we are handling complaints in the mediation, but we're also watching the marketplace for the those that aren't following through and need further investigation and additional enforcement. So that taking money and not following through and disappearing is something that needs a deeper look.
Lois in Chippewa Falls, we turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, just today I noticed that I had a charge on my bank statement that I really wasn't sure what it was for. And come to find out, I've been paying this charge since 2015 to Score Sense. And there was an 800 number on my statement. And I called that number, and then when I talked to the person at ScoreSense, they were saying that I must have been slammed, and I don't understand how that can happen, or how, you know, how they'd be paying out and how they can stop it and how they can refund me. She said she'd refund me some money, so
yeah.
Do you know anything about ScoreSense?
No. Michelle?
Is it one of those credit reporting type companies?
Yes.
Yeah. Well... It's impossible for us to know how this happened, but sometimes companies just charge you and don't provide a service. And there have been many cases against telephone providers, you know, because they're usually the vehicle. The charges show up on your phone bill, or in this case, a bank statement. But you obviously cannot be charged unless you've agreed to have the service provided for you. And slamming is kind of the terminology that's used for just having this charge applied without any background or purpose.
Yeah, one thing just in general, not specific to this, about kind of slamming or these small charges you may see on different bills is if you do online purchasing, you really want to pay attention at the end when they're summarizing and before you say okay. There are small little boxes sometimes that are pre-checked that you're agreeing to this annual subscription of whatever, or that you are signing up to be a member of something, or that you are agreeing as part of it to get your credit score type situation, these extra features you can buy. So paying attention to those small things and any boxes that are checked or that you need to check at the bottom and reading what that's about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see. There. Okay, I just was dumbfounded. I didn't know where it came from. So.
Yeah, so as long as they're taking care of everything, and if it doesn't get taken care of and refunded back, file a complaint.
Okay, there we go. Thank you so much for calling, Lois. Tom in Burlington up next. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling.
They gave me this piece of paper, and they said, sign it. And I signed it. It said, all furniture must be paid in full and picked up within one business day. All furniture sales are final. If any reason you fail to pick up your furniture, you will receive only 50% of the purchase price in the form of a store credit. This was Love Incorporated, where they get everything for free. They gave me a store credit, and I wasn't able to get in there the next day. Aren't you supposed to get a copy of anything that has a time situation on it? Aren't they supposed to give you a copy of what you sign if there's a time thing on it?
Hmm.
Is there anything like that?
No, I'm not aware of anything like that. If I sign something, I do ask for a copy of what I've signed so I can walk that away. But I'm not aware of, as it relates to furniture sales at a business location, of a provision with time restrictions and requirements there. No.
In real estate, if you sign a contract and there's a time thing on this contract, has a time thing on it, then you get a copy of that contract. They didn't give me a copy of the contract. I had no idea what I was signing. And this was Love Incorporated. They're supposed to be helping people. And they wouldn't give me my money back.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not sure there. I mean, you could file a complaint and we could help look at those details because they may come back. But it sounds like that they talked to you about the time frame with a purchase, about when you needed to come pick things up and what that meant. And those knowing details before you make purchases about picking things up and what refund policies are or what money you may get back are all important details.
Yeah, but Tom could still go ahead and file.
He sure could. I'm not aware of any regulation, so it would really likely be that we'd help try and mediate or understand what happened.
Yeah, so maybe mediate that out. Okay, well, Tom, again, the number 800-422-7128 and... Sandy, what is it again? Your email?
It's our web address is datcp.wi.gov.
All right, I wrote it down this time, so I'll remember it. You can join in too. The number to call 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. The FCC is taking a look at the do not call laws, Sandy, if I'm not mistaken. What are they proposing?
Yeah, one of the biggest problems has been an FCC rule that requires a call to be connected once it's dialed. And that means that the telecom providers, even though they see thousands, hundreds of thousands of calls being blasted from one phone number, they can't block those. So what the FCC is saying is, let's give the telco providers an opportunity to block some of those calls so they don't reach, you know, people sitting in their homes or businesses. And, you know, we've said many times that the solution to this whole robocall problem has to be technological, because it's a technological, it's technology that it enables this problem, so it has to be technology that stops it. And I think this is huge progress war against robocalls.
Yeah, I think that's a great, great, great idea. Well, I tell you what, we can take some more calls. You know, there's one, before we go back to the phones, I had a small rebate coming back from the state of Wisconsin this year on my income taxes, and it did land in my checking account, so I got mine, and it got me wondering again or thinking about how many scams are there those scammers still working on taking people's refunds and so forth from taxes. Have you seen anything on that?
Well, what we've seen recently, not exactly rebates on taxes, it's the reverse. We've talked about it last year. The IRS phone calls are back. So we're getting reports from consumers, about 15 to 20 per week, that while we took a pause in the fall after some arrests were made and some crackdowns on call centers, we're seeing a slow increase of reports that the phone scammers are back calling and threatening that you owe money or that you have back taxes and we're going to take you to court on those and demand or come arrest you right away. So very aggressive again, that you can settle it all right here by giving us, you know, banking information, wiring us money, or, hey, let's get some iTunes gift cards. And you can give us that information on those as a form of payment. So we are seeing those. So everyone needs to be on the alert again that that's not how the IRS does business. And then you want to watch that you receive your rebate or your refund on your taxes and monitor that you get that back and that it's deposited into your account or as you direct it to receive that payment, and not fall for anything on sales as it relates to prepayment. You know, your refund's coming, so come take advantage of this deal and direct your refund this way instead.
Tony in Milwaukee, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Tony.
Hey, guys. How are we doing this morning?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Hey, I get all these credit card offers in the mail continuously, and I have to shred them and all that good stuff. But I was thinking about calling the opt-out number that's at the bottom. Printed on the credit card offer, it says pre-screen and opt-out notice. And I call the number. It's an 888 number, and it sounds legitimate. It sounds like maybe the federal number. I'm not exactly sure what they say. I can't remember exactly what the recording is. But you can opt out for five years or for life. And the only catch is you have to give your Social Security number. So this sounds really tempting, and I want to do it because I keep getting these offers. But is this a good number for me to do? Am I safe?
Yeah, and the question is, do you want to provide your Social Security number?
Yeah.
We actually do advise people to do that. If they don't want to receive those credit card offers, you can read the, I mean, we get several a week, and it can be annoying. You can either do this online at optoutprescreen.com, and that's all one word, optoutprescreen.com, or you can call the toll-free number. It's 1-888-567-8688.
And that's the number that I see on this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've got the right number.
So it sounds like a legitimate deal. I shouldn't worry about giving my Social Security number out then, because I guess I'm calling them anyway, so maybe I'm being too paranoid, huh?
Well, no, because you received something in the mail and with a phone number, and it wasn't that you went in search of this phone number. So I think that's a good pause and hesitation that you had there, and then when you found out you had to give your Social Security number. The reason you have to give that number is because it overlaps with the credit reporting agencies, and everything is tied to do you get these offers based on your credit information there. So that's why you have to give that. It's coordinating it back to your file, in essence, that you're opting out.
Okay. There we go. Thanks a lot for calling, Tony. Appreciate it. Michelle Ryden and Sandy Chalmers are guests today as we take a look at consumer issues. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer issues and consumer scams today with our two guests from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Michelle Ryan and Sandy Chalmers. And join in. Here's the number to call with your own question or comment, 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Let's go to Andy in Mount Horeb next. Andy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning, Larry.
Morning.
I have a couple comments. One is about lien waivers.
Okay.
When you pay your general contractor, a lot of times he does not pay the subcontractors until he gets paid. So that creates an issue of getting a lien waiver from the subcontractors. And what you can do is you can get something called a trust receipt from the contractor. And that says that if he gets paid, he will pay the subcontractors immediately, and then you can get an actual lien waiver from the subcontractors. The other comment I have is about workman's compensation. If the employees working on the job for the contractor are actual employees, he has to have something called workman's compensation, which means that they are insured in case of an accident. The problem comes when contractors hire individuals to work for them, either as a subcontractor or sometimes, I hate to say it, paying them in cash. So that's another thing you have to watch out for when you hire someone.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, thanks a lot for calling, Andy. Appreciate your call. Michelle, you want to comment?
Yeah, I mean, he's right with the workers' compensation, and if they're employees, and that's a state law regulation there that our agency doesn't handle. But when we're talking to consumers and or contractors, if they indicate through their promotion that they have insurance, we advise consumers, okay, receive that proof of insurance so you know. And if you're involved with your bank and a loan, they're going to want information as it relates to that as well. And before, often you can take draws from a bank if they're involved. They want to know that the lien waivers are available and things. So it all depends on the size of your job. And we're just making sure that consumers are aware of their lien rights and that they should be getting those lien waivers from all involved with the contract.
Yeah. Thanks, Andy. Appreciate the call. Judy in Madison, we turn to you next. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking the call. I just have a quick question about the IRS calls that you were just talking about a little while ago.
Yeah.
A few days ago, I was talking with a friend, and she might have misunderstood this, but she was saying that she had heard something about the IRS actually does make calls to people sometimes, and you had said that they never do. But after they have sent out a couple letters for back taxes or something that hadn't, and they were getting no response to the letters that they sent out, that they were calling people. I don't know if this is true or not, but if it is true, how do you tell the difference?
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, there was something on the news just recently about the fact that the IRS is going to be hiring private contractors, Michelle, which doesn't sound like a good idea to me. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so last fall at the federal level, the collections practices changed and how they can proceed with that. And so they can use the private companies to collect, and the IRS has decided to follow suit. But there are laws in place as far as how collection companies operate, and that you can, during the call, okay, put that in writing to me. You should have received letters in advance if you're one of the individuals who has that's going to be your first form of notification. It's not going to be the call. These collection companies are going to arrange payments. They're not going to say wire me money. They're not going to say pay with an iTunes gift cards. They won't threaten coming warrants for your arrest and those practices and be aggressive in that manner. And
any checks written, I know, have to be written to the IRS, not to the company.
Yeah, and you can always, who are you and what's your name and your company name, and verify that with the Department of Financial Institutions as well, because they regulate the practices of collections in this state. And so you'd have a way to confirm, but they wouldn't be fearful of putting something in writing to you then either.
I think what happens is as I remember the news item from last night or the night before, then they receive 20 or 25% from the IRS of the amount of money that was actually recovered, let's say.
Well,
and I can understand that. It's just going to be confusing.
Oh, yeah.
Before, if we got a call that said they were calling from the IRS, we automatically knew right away it was a scam and hang up.
Yeah.
So, it's going, I think it's going to be confusing if they do that.
Yeah. Well, I think they're going to do that.
Well, yeah, and we'll see what kind of guidance the IRS has for consumers on this. But remember that most of the fraudulent IRS calls are still robocalls. So if you get one of those robocalls, it's not the IRS.
Definitely not the IRS. Okay. All right. Thanks, Judy, for calling. Appreciate it. We have John in Presque Isle up next. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Just a comment to you guy about the opt-out on the credit cards.
Yeah.
We used to get 25 a month easily, and we opted out well over 5 years ago, and we get absolutely nothing anymore, which is great.
Oh, all right. So that opt-out worked for you, that 888 number.
I don't remember whether I did it online or did the 888 number, because I'm an old guy and I forget things. So.
But it worked.
It worked. Actually, the only ones we get are once in a while if it's somebody we're specifically doing business with.
Yeah.
You know, like a credit union maybe that we have a loan with. They might send us something once in a while, but we don't get the barrage from all the big credit card companies anymore.
Good to know. Thanks, John.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. Appreciate the call. Rod in Eagle River up next. Hi, Rod.
Good morning. So I kind of have an unusual situation in the Eagle River, as well as a couple other cities in the state of Wisconsin. The legislature allowed them to do a premier resort tax for high vacation travel areas. And it's a tax that's only within the city, and it applies to merchandise and a few other things and helps the city for roads or whatever. The issue I have is I don't live in the city. I have the same zip code as the city because it's a rural area. And then my utilities, in some cases, or things that I buy that are like on a yearly subscription type basis, are charging me that premier resort tax. And so I'll call them up and say, you know, I don't live there. And even if I did, it doesn't apply to this type of purchase. Let's say it's like cell phone usage or XM or Sirius radio or different examples like that. And they say, well, if you don't pay your whole bill, we're going to disconnect you. And I say you're supposed to do that. So I even went to a government official and got a letter from the government saying that they weren't supposed to be collecting it in for these type of purchases. And this person doesn't even live in the taxed area. And the government entity even indicated they never even received any of the money from the couple of the companies that were charging me this extra tax. And I'm sure I'm just one of many. And in one case, I argued it out. And, you know, finally, after about 6 months, they agreed to stop it and refunded me, which was a small amount of money. But if you multiply that by a couple thousand people in the general zip code area, it could really be a substantial amount of money. And it's not even going to the taxing entity who should be getting it if it were appropriate.
Wow. Is this something that has come across your desk, Sandy or Michelle? Shaking your head, no.
No, it hasn't. And we don't usually, we get involved in the issues where there's additional charges, such as for services, the small slamming and cramming kinds of things mm-hmm. we talked about. But the tax items are typically handled by the Department of Revenue because collections there. Some service utility fees would be Public Service Commission, but tax is handled by Department of Revenue. So that might be something that Rod would want to give a ring to the Department of Revenue on, because I think they'd be interested if things are being collected as a tax and not moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. And we don't have a number for that. Maybe we can look that number up. We've got a news break coming up. We'll see if we can come up with that number, Rod. So stay listening. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, appreciate the call. We'll see. We'll get that number and we'll have it up. Kathy on Facebook says she recently moved a building and had to have power lines and cables moved. The cable companies and use subcontractors to move these cables, and she believes one of the subcontractors drastically overcharged. Who do you approach with this kind of complaint?
If she would like to file a complaint with us, we could help sort this out. It's hard to tell based on this information what's going on. But she could file a complaint online or call our toll-free number, and we could help her sort it out.
That makes sense. Stephanie in Franklin called to recommend using a credit freeze to stop credit fraud. And I know you've talked about, Sandy, you've talked about this in the past on the show.
Yeah, a credit freeze basically locks down your credit file, so a company can't, or a thief can't open a line of credit in your name without your knowledge. And it does cost $10 per credit reporting agency, and there are three major ones. But there's lots of information available on our website, datcp.wy.gov. We have a fact sheet available on how to do that.
And it's, I mean, you know, it's going to cost you $30. And then it's going to cost you $30 to, if you want to unfreeze it.
But you can arrange with who you're getting extension of credit for, or who they're going to check. So you may not have to lift it with all three or put the temporary thaw on. You can just arrange who they're going to check.
Oh, that makes good sense. Well, our guests today, Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection, will be with us right up until about 12:30 today. We're going to take a look at the news, the weather. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net. And we'll look up that phone number as well right after this look at the news. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Beeler here. Happy to have you with us as we take a look at consumer protection issues with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen of the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection. You may have a consumer question. You might have a problem that's developed. Maybe just a general question. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page. Just look for The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page. I'd love to hear from you. We've got open lines. Get you on really quickly here. 1-800-642-1234. You know, I'm not sure that we've talked about all this. There have been a number of federal agencies, you know, that have issued warnings lately. Sandy, if I'm not mistaken, do you have any information? I know we've, you know, we certainly have talked about the IRS, but others that we need to...
Well, sure, yeah. Both the Federal Trade Commission and Federal Communications Commission have now warned about the Can You Hear Me phone scam. And this has been discussed, you know, since about February or so. But you'll receive usually a recorded call, and the first thing you hear is, Can you hear me? And you, of course, say yes. And what we suppose is that somebody is in the background recording your voice saying yes, which then they can use to authorize charging your credit card or, you know, who knows what. So that's something to be aware of. And again, those are usually robocalls, and you should be suspicious of any robocall anyway. Another one that we've heard about lately involves the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which is, of course, the home of Medicare and Medicaid.
Yeah.
But somebody is using the hotline number there as part of a phishing phone scam. So on your caller ID, it will say HHS hotline number or something like that. Sometimes the caller will ask you to verify your name. Sometimes they ask you to verify your social security number or your bank account number. But just be aware that criminals can manipulate your caller ID to say whatever they want it to say. So we haven't talked yet about the Federal Trade Commission's annual report of fraud complaints. And we usually get between 10 and 11,000 complaints a year. The FTC gets millions, and so we look at that data, and we can use it to for a number of purposes, but almost 77% of people who filed a complaint said that the criminals, whoever the scammers were, contacted them by phone. So that's, you know, just be aware that they're likely to contact you by phone. So be very, very cautious and skeptical of phone calls you receive.
We have Bob in Lac des Flambeaux who has something for us. So let's go there. Bob, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Sure. Thank you for your this good program. When my wife and I moved to Lac des Flambeaux 4 years ago from Chicago, we bought cell phones from the local Minocqua Verizon company. On the assurance of the salesperson that they would work very well at our home, they didn't work at all at our home. So we took them back. Someone else at the store looked at their computer system that tells you, you know, where it's covered, and this person confirmed, no, you don't have any service in that area. So therefore, we will, we will cancel your contract, and there will be no penalties. And he made a notation in his computer to that effect. Okay, so now fast forward. For 4 years, we've been receiving $600 termination bills from Horizon. I've written to everybody I can think of. Doesn't do any good. It's now in collection agency, and they've destroyed our credit score. And I just guess we have to be a victim of this because I don't know what else to do.
That doesn't... No. So good, for sure. What about it, Michelle?
Have you filed a complaint with our agency?
No, I have not. Yeah. Everybody else, but not with you.
I would do that next step. File a complaint with us, because we have regulations in place that say you can't make representations that services will be provided in locations that they can't provide that service. Mm. There can certainly be misunderstandings and miscommunications in a transaction about what specific location we're talking about, but given the way the rest of this transaction, you know, transpired, I'd file a complaint with us and let us try and step in as well.
Okay. I will do that. And thank you very much for your advice.
Yeah. Great. And so the phone number, one option to have a complaint form mailed out is 1-800-422-7128. The other way is online, and that is datcp.wi.gov.
Okay. Now that number was 422-7128?
Correct.
Yeah, 1-800.
Mm-hmm. 1-800. Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to go back to before our news break, someone was looking, needed the number of the Department of Revenue, and Michelle came up with that customer service number for Department of Revenue, and that number is area 608-266-2890. So that's 608-266-2890. And we'll see if we can get that up on our Facebook page as well so that people have it. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can shoot us an email at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And lots of callers coming up online here. We don't have anybody that we can get to right at the minute. Sandy, are there some other issues that we haven't covered yet that in the meantime?
Well, just going back to the Federal Trade Commission annual report on fraud complaints, I looked at the Wisconsin data, and it looks like about 15,000 people filed complaints at the Federal Trade Commission. Those who reported how much they lost reported losing an average of $964 apiece.
Wow.
But a total of $7.6 million. So that, you know, it just, if you feel like fraud is everywhere, well, it is. And we talk a lot about how to identify fraud and head it off. The FTC data also shows that, as I mentioned earlier, most fraud, most criminals will try to contact you via phone, and they will ask for payment via wire transfer. So anytime you receive a request to pay via wire transfer, a red flag should go up in your mind, and you should think, this is probably a scam. I need to get out of this immediately.
Let's turn to another caller, Leisha in Spring Green up next. Leisha, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I know this isn't a big deal because we get so many fraudulent calls, but last night we actually got a call from the governor's mansion.
Supposedly.
Somebody's using that, yeah. And this is, you know, Wisconsin State, and it's 266-1212. They don't leave a message, so.
Oh, so.
I looked it up online, and that's what people are saying. It just, they just started doing it, and they never leave a message, so.
Oh,
so. Just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, that's the governor's office number. And was it a robocall, or who was on the other end of the line?
Well, unfortunately, we had a malfunction, and the answering machine wasn't working for some reason, which it always does. But like I say, I looked it up online, and it just started, you know, like in February. And it just amazes me how they can do this stuff, you know, using that number of all things, you know.
Yeah.
If you know of anybody else who's getting those calls and the nature of the call, it'd be great to let the folks at the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection know.
Right.
For sure.
Uh-huh.
So if you find anything else out, Leisha, please let them know.
Oh, I would.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. Oh, boy. Mary in Iron River, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, and beautiful Wisconsin day we've got.
Yeah, it's a nice weather out there, I think, across a good part of the state. What's on your mind today?
Well, I keep on getting this really strange phone call. It's a robocall. And the first thing they say is that they've been monitoring my Visa credit card, and because of my good payment over the last 6 months, they're willing to make me a special offer. And the first time I kind of fell for it, and so I pressed, you know, one, and on came this kind of foreign-speaking person and actually asked what kind of credit card I had and what the number was. So, I mean, I received this phone call over and over, and I keep on, I go ahead and press the one, and I tell them, please don't ever call here again. I don't want your offers. Don't call me. I know this is a scam. So that happened yesterday at like 5:30. And I told them, don't ever call my number again. And, of course, they hung up on me. And then at 7:15, I got the same phone call. And then at 9 o'clock at night, I got the same phone call. And finally, I just said to him, I don't even have a Visa credit card. Why are you calling me?
Well, Sandy?
Yeah, we recommend that you not engage with these people at all, because they know that you're willing to talk to them, because you have repeatedly. So, I mean, it's gotten to the point where we advise people, if you don't recognize the number on your caller ID, don't even pick up the phone. And if it's someone you know who needs to talk to you, they'll leave a voicemail for you and you can call them back. But these people are extremely persistent, and you've found that out. But if you press one or engage in any way, even to say, don't call me anymore, the calls will continue.
There are some apps out there now, more than one, that apparently if you have that on your phone, it'll recognize robocalls and shunt them away. Are you familiar with any of those?
Yeah, there's a product called Nomo Robo that works on voice over internet phones. If you have a hardwired phone, she's in Iron River, that's probably the case with her phone, it won't work. But even in a situation like that, if she had a phone that she could use to block numbers, that might work in this situation. If you have a cell phone or smartphone, there are a lot of apps that you can use to block sales calls or even just identify sales calls. So those are tools that everybody should be using.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a different number every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know they change the numbers all the time. But there are some apps that recognize the even different numbers. They recognize the nature of the number,
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, they develop a blacklist of numbers, and then they either just block that call from receiving from getting to your phone, or they identify, they tag it as a sales call.
Yeah. I know I had Peter Green, an IT fellow, on the show, and he was just automatically blocking these calls as they came in, but then he'd used up all of his blocker space on his phone and then got an app, and it's worked really well for him. So there are apps out there if you've got a smartphone to use. And then if for somebody that's got a landline phone, as you say, you can get these phones. You might have to purchase a new phone out of it, but it might be worth the the cost. They're not overly expensive, are they?
No, you can buy a 3-handset phone for $25, and it can be worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Mary. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Carol in Portage next. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Larry.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have kind of a similar question or response to a caller that had previous called in about robo-dialing from the governor's office.
Yeah.
I received one a couple of weeks back, and it actually was a pre-recorded voice of Scott Walker.
Oh.
Inviting me to stay on the line, that there was they were having a town hall phone meeting where your issues could be, you could speak directly to the governor. And I was just kind of flabbergasted because it just came out of the blue late in the afternoon, and I thought it was a scam. But it also said anyone could participate by calling back in to the number, and it was the governor's office number. And I actually hung up because I couldn't believe it. And when I thought about it and I called back in, then I got an answering machine saying, leave your concern and we'll address it and get back to you. Like the live feature was no longer available. So I'm wondering, was that a legitimate call?
Well, we'll do some checking into this, but I know I have gotten those pre-recorded messages from various elected officials inviting me to a town hall meeting, and you remain on the line, and you'll be joined to the town hall meeting, and so we assume that that's what is happening in this case, and of course those calls are legal under our state do not call law.
So there you go. You'd suspect that there might be some information coming out of the office. If it was actually the governor's office, they would send out some sort of press releases or whatever to kind of tell people that that's coming. So if that fact was what they were going to do. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, Chris on Facebook said he, in January, signed up with an internet service provider, ISP. He was told there would not be a monthly modem router fee, but he is being charged the fee. He followed up with the company and was told everyone is charged the modem router fee. How much time does he have to file a complaint with Consumer Protection, or has he waited too long? It was January that this happened.
He has not waited too long. So we get complaints from situations that consumers have been trying to work on for themselves for a year. the gentleman who called earlier in the show, it was 4 years ago that he moved in the cell phones. There are statutes of limitations on some of our administrative rules and statutes, but months is not an issue.
Yeah.
Because often we encourage consumers to make that first contact and try and resolve it themselves and see what's happening there, and that can take some time. So I would file that complaint at this point and don't worry about the time frame.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you have to kind of save that stuff too, because if you received something that says now there's not going to be any monthly modem router fee, if you don't have that piece of information, then
Yeah, it's important to keep your documentation and your records until your first bills come through when you're signing up for a new contract or service that establishes. And, you know, personally, I'd keep things for, you know, a quarter, 6 months, year, depending upon what type of transaction it is, to show that things don't change over time either.
Bob in Franklin up next. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I've had some issues with legitimate businesses. They're not really, well, they could be scams, I guess, like AT&T and Aurora. And I was wondering if the Department of Consumer Protection has a list of businesses that, you know, take good care of their customers and they don't get many complaints.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have a list like that. So what we encourage consumers to do, depending upon what type of transaction they're in, call and check it out. We'll tell you if we've had complaints during the last 3 to 4 years. But we don't rate companies, whether or not they're good, bad, what kind of standing they're in, because you have to consider how large a company is and how many customers they may have. Also, what those complaints are about. Is it an ongoing issue? Did they have a billing system that broke and then they were responsive, or did they ignore everybody? So we let consumers try and come to their own conclusions, because everyone has different values about what's important to them from a company as well.
But if somebody's gotten a lot of complaints,
we'll tell them how many and what happened. Were they resolved or weren't they? And consumers can also choose to view the complaints under open records law and make their own determinations based on what those were about.
There you go, Bob. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Jerome in Jackson, your turn. Hi, Jerome.
Hi. I have a question about a contractor on... this is a garage builder that poured a concrete slab for me back a long time ago, and I want to know what the time limit I could have for suing him.
So if the product, all right, in this place, a slab, and the slab, apparently from the sound of Jerome's comments, didn't work, it would take a while for something like a concrete slab to show up. Is there a...
Well,
time limit.
Yeah, if he's taking him to small claims court, you can kind of do that at any point in time if there's no law in place. But if he's trying to make reference to a violation of a law or representation, that may factor in, but it was this under warranty. There's a lot of unknowns with this, so you could... file with the small claims or talk to an attorney about your situation. You could start by trying to file a complaint with us as well, because maybe it could be resolved that way rather than the courts. And again, it might be, is there a warranty in place on this work?
So, and again, to do that, he can call the 1-800-422-7128, that number, or go to datcp.wi.gov. That's datcp.wi.gov. And you can do it online or phone, and you guys will mail it out.
Right, absolutely.
Well, always a pleasure, Michelle and Sandy. Thank you so much. You'll be back on May 4th.
Okay.
We'll do it all over again. Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And again, they will be back on May 4th. Just to look ahead, tomorrow it's Garden Talk, and Liz Freemuth from the Garden Hole will be back with us to talk about fun plants to try in your garden this year. So I hope you can stay with us for that. And stay with us for this afternoon. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.